Since Bob has been in this class before, and Rachel, you have background, I'm going to start normally, but if you feel that you'd like to see it in a different format, feel free to speak up. Please join me in saying the Anna Bakar. Anna Bakar. Aleph Bet Gimel Yud Tav Tzadi. These six letters have a gematria of 506, which is the same gematria as one of the names of God, Vav Shin Resh. And that name connects to being able to see patterns, where we have this pattern that returns, where we make the same mistake over and over again. And this name helps us to see that pattern and to recognize that pattern. And it's also the same gematria as the phrase, V'ahavta unconditional love. Ahava. It's been so long since I've done the whole connection. So whenever we're saying this verse, we're connecting and meditating on the concept of unconditional love, which is the repair for hatred for no reason. Kabel rinat amcha sagvenu taharenu nora kufrei shayin sintet nun. The second verse has six letters that spell two Hebrew words, kra satan, which translates as tear up satan. These six letters can be permutated to spell Sha'ar Katan, which sounds similar but isn't. It means small gates. And it's a hint to us to guard our gates, the eyes, the ears, the nose, and the mouth, which are the entry points for the negative system. Na Gibor Dor Sheyehudcha Kevavat Shamrem Nun Gimel Dalet Yud Kaf Shin. The first three letters, Nun Gimel Dalet, has a gematria of 57, which is the Hebrew word zan, which means parnasah, sustenance. Yud Kaf Shin is a sequence that we utilize to take back the energy that we've given to the negative side when we were given an opportunity to make a correction and we failed to do so. Barchem tacharem rachame sidkatcha tamid gamlem. Betet Resh, Tzadi Taf Gimel. This sequence connects us to the Sefirah of Netzach and its attribute of eternal victory. Chasin Kadosh Berov Tuvcha Nael Adatach Het Kuf Bet, Tet Nun Ayin. This sequence connects us to the Sefirah of Hod and its attribute of appreciation and acknowledgement and thankfulness. Yachid Ge'e Lamcha Penei Zokrei Kiddushatach Yud Gimel Lamed, Pei Zion Kuf. This sequence connects us to the Sefer Av Yesod, and it helps to speed the wisdom of Kabbalah during this, the sixth millennium, during this, our generation. The letters of the month of Sivan, the Resh, and the Zion. The Resh and Zion together have a gematria of 207, which is the same gematria as the Hebrew word or, which means light. And also the phrase Adon Olam, which means master of the universe. And also the phrase En Sof, the endless world. And we can see the power, the strength, the energy that's in the month of Sivan, which is the month where the Torah was revealed. Shavatenu Kabel Ushma Tziakatenu Yodea Talumot Shinkufav Sadiyutaf. The first two letters, Shin and Kuf, have a gematria of 400, and that teaches us about completion, as it represents 10 sephirot within 10 sephirot within each of the four worlds. The last four letters have the same gematria as the first verse, 506, which relates to Ahavat Hinam, unconditional love, and to the name of God, Vav Shin Resh. And we learn from this that the path to completion, the path to perfection, is by injecting unconditional love and by recognizing the patterns in our life where we've made the mistakes and changing that pattern. And the eighth verse we say in a whisper, but I will say it out loud for the purposes of teaching. Baruch Shem Kivod Malchuto Leolam Vayed. I'm now going to read from the Zohar. I usually read from the Parasha of the week, and we are entering the week of Korach. Korach is an opportunity to control the natural disasters, tsunamis, earthquakes, tornadoes, all of those acts of God that people think cannot be controlled. The Parsha of Korach gives us that opportunity, and it's recommended that you hear the Torah this coming Shabbat, and at the appropriate place, which is where the earthquake that Moses called. Moses described a unique earthquake, and then God manifested that, or Moses manifested it with the 72 names after he described it. I'm reading from the first section, verse 3. Vayehi Noam Adonai Eloheinu aleinu maaseh yadeinu konenei aleinu maaseh yadeinu konenehu. Tachatzi acharon yamina levae shemala korach bae lemebad halufa demina lishmala begimul kaf itanash vila odela tishtakach be lishina bisha veitanash bek. Kola Rabbi Yehuda Mar Shemala Id Kalil Tadir Bimina Korach Ba'ale Achlafa Tikuna Dilela Betata Begimul Kach Id David Meela Betata. Come and behold, Aaron is right, which is Chesed, and the Levites are left, which is Gevurah. Korach wanted to exchange the right for the left. He desired the priesthood, which is right, for the Levites who are left. Therefore he was punished. Furthermore, he had the evil tongue by speaking out against Moses, and was punished for everything, Rabbi Yehuda said. The left is always contained in the right, because that is how the left is corrected. Korach wished to substitute the correction of above and below, since he aspired to the domination of the Levites, which are left, so that they should not be included in the priests, which are right. Therefore, he was annihilated from above and below. The Midrash teaches us that Korach went into the earthquake when the earth separated. It was a unique earthquake, not that unique. When the earth separated, the Midrash says that Korach, his wife, his children, all of his possessions, anything that he had ever touched, the 250 men, their possessions, all were damaged and went into this open space in the earth. And that open space led directly to the gates of what's called Gehinnom, which gets translated as hell, but it's a very different concept of hell than what is typical of the Western world's perception. But in all of those children that went into this earthquake, they were allowed to come out of that. And they wrote songs, 10 different psalms. If you look through the Tehillim, the psalms, you'll find 10 of them that start, "This is said by the children of Korach." One of those songs was sung in the temple every Monday, every second day, because the song itself is a correction for the concept of what is incorrect about Monday. Every day of creation, there was something done that was not perfect, and it's man's duty, man's opportunity to correct those things. So each day, the idea of Monday, which is the second day, the idea that is corrected is the fact that the number two, while very powerful in the concept of male and female, and the coming together into unity that opportunity provides, the fact that two is not one, needs to be corrected. Male and female make one soul. A male without a female is not a soul. A female without a male may be more complete, but it's still not a soul. The definition of soul, of that entity that is us, is male and female in unity. And that's the concept of male and female, which when that two halves come together in the appropriate way, corrects the day of Monday. Does anybody have any questions or comments? I start my classes with these two concepts. One, the Anabakoah, because it represents the energy of creation. And there is nothing more powerful than creation, because everything is included in that moment of creation. That moment of creation that is many, many eons, and even beyond eons, before the Big Bang. That is the energy that we bring into this space when we say the Anabakoah. That's why we teach in the third class, and probably earlier with you guys, While we teach Dhyana Bakoach is this technique of balance, because creation actually is ultimately perfection, ultimately the ultimate form of balance. In our world, we have not yet corrected everything. We're in a process. But ultimately, we will achieve that perfection, that balance. And by saying the Ana Bakoach, we connect to that energy of balance. So whatever we need in our life, and most of us don't really know what we need. We could be too tired, but not able to sleep. We could be energized. Whatever it is we need to bring us to balance, that's what we will receive when we say the Ana Bakoach. And the other thing I read is a verse from the Zohar. The Zohar is a book that is within itself holiness. Holiness is a word that is very usually not defined. It's difficult for most people to define holiness. But holiness is the aspect of being cleansed and then being elevated above that level. I can cleanse myself. I can wash myself. I can clean myself up. But I can only go so far by myself. Holiness is the concept of being elevated to a higher level of consciousness by virtue of something outside of me. So by reading from the Zohar, we bring this energy of holiness into this space. That's the reason that I do it. Any questions, comments? I'm not hearing, if you're asking, I'm not hearing.
You were on mute.
Okay, on the other, when I was taught, you say certain verses, and then you would go to your tikkun, and then go back to different phrases at different times?
Yes. Yes. And I will, when I teach the Ana Bakoach completely, I give that explanation. And in fact, on Thursday evenings, I teach a class, an advanced class, where I'm explaining how to pronounce the names that's in the Tikkun HaNefesh and the Kavanah involved in what you're drawing and what's there and how to heal those aspects of our body and soul. So yes, that what you were taught is correct. But from the standpoint of how long it would take us to go through the Tikkun HaNefesh and the full sort, the Ana Bakoach can be a 5-hour meditation. Every verse can be meditated on for many different aspects. Or it can be done in 30 seconds. It can be done just by saying the first letters, Aleph, Bet, Gimel, Yud, Tav, Tzadi, Kuf, Resh, Ayin, Sin, Tet, Nun, and so forth. Baruch Shem Kavod Malchuto Leolam Vayed. The Ana Bakoach draws the energy of creation. But we live in a world where there's a communication between higher levels of consciousness and our level of consciousness. When we draw the energy of creation, our vessel can't handle the energy of the Big Bang. Can't handle all of the energy of creation. So there's a communication that takes place between the higher levels and ourselves. It's kind of like, Bob will understand this, and I'm just going to use it as a metaphor, and I hope it's clear, Rachel. I don't mean to offend if it's not. Just say I need another metaphor, and I'll give you one. But if we look at the electricity in the walls of a house, and you can plug in two lamps. one that's a 100-watt bulb and one that's a 500-watt bulb. Is there any difference in the electricity that's running into those two lamps? No, it's the same electricity. That electricity is a metaphor for the Creator, for creation, for the energy. How does the 100-watt bulb say, I only want 100 watts? I don't want more energy than that. I cannot handle more than that. How does the 500-watt bulb say, don't give me more than 500? I don't want more. I can't handle it. There is this communication. That communication has been documented by the electricians, by physicists, by mathematicians. There's a formula called resistance that explains that the bulb only glows with the amount that the resistor can handle. But that's really a form of communication between the higher level of consciousness, the electricity, and the lower level of consciousness, the light bulb. That communication that takes place, it reveals what it reveals. Now, we live in a world where that's taking place. When we say the Anabakoa, we literally bring all of the energy of creation, which we cannot handle completely. And so there's a communication. The Creator says to us, how much do you want? And we say the equivalent of 100 watts, 50 watts, 20 watts, whatever we say. And that's what we receive. Because the Creator is willing to restrict himself. He doesn't want to harm us. He's going to give us what we need. Not necessarily what we want, and that's a whole other discussion. But this is the idea of why we can say the Anabakoach in so many different ways. And we can do it in 30 seconds, or we can do it in 5 hours. Are we getting the same energy, the same result? Actually, we are. But we won't sense it as the same. We will sense it on a different level. We will sense the 30-second one as I'm busy, I'm rushing, I don't have the time to do the kavana. We'll sense the 5 hours as really an amazing meditation. Which do you have the time for? Which do you wish for? What is your desire? What are you using the creation energy for? That's what's being communicated all the time. I hope I've answered your question.
Yeah, that was a good metaphor.
Okay. Any other questions or comments? Okay. This class is really at a basic class. If there were other people there who did not have background, we would start with, and I'm going to ask Bob to show you the two sentences that I asked him to print out. And what we do, because we have one rule in all of my classes, and this is a very important rule. You are never to believe anything I say. Absolutely forbidden to believe me. The purpose of Kabbalah is for you to experience the Creator in your own way. There will be people who will experience the Creator in a very normal prayer way. There will be people who experience the Creator in psychic abilities. There will be people who experience the Creator in deeper ways. There will be people who will grow to the level of mind over matter. These are all different levels of consciousness that the vessel, each of us, has the potential to do, depending on what they want to do. Do they have the desire for this? Are they willing to change themselves that much to achieve that expanded consciousness? The whole idea, never to believe, is so that you constantly remember and connect with what is your experience of the Creator. I cannot prove to you, nor do I intend to prove to you, there is a Creator. And there are people who will come to a beginning Kabbalah class who don't have a belief in the Creator, and that's fine. The tools of Kabbalah still work for them, because God doesn't really care if you believe in Him or you don't believe in Him. The first sentence, the first word in the Esser Dibrot, what gets corruptly translated as the Ten Commandments, is Anochi. And everybody says Anochi means I. And the verse is Anochi Hashem, I am God, you're God. But Anochi is not the way Hebrew says I. Hashem and Moses are the only people in the Torah who use the word Anochi. It's a different word. And we learn there's no synonyms in Hebrew. So if the word for I is Ani, and the word for I is Anochi, they are not the same words. They're not synonyms. They're different levels. They're different consciousness. The first word, first phrase, Anochi Hashem Elohecha, I am God, your God. That's not a command. It's a sentence. It's a verse. What is God saying to us? God is saying, know me. Don't believe in me. I'm not asking you to believe in me. I don't care if you believe in me. Experience me. Bring me into you so that you can know what it's like. And I've done this with Bob, but let me... If I were to drop this bottle, in your experience, will it fall to the floor? I'm not playing a game with it. I'm just asking the question. If I drop it, will it fall to the floor?
Yeah.
Of course. Why do you know that? Do you believe it's going to fall to the floor? Or do you know it? Oh, it's logical. Every time I've dropped something, it's always fallen to the floor unless the table caught it first. But essentially, we know there's something called gravity. We've observed it work in our lives. We've experienced it. We know there's gravity. We know the bottle will fall. It's not about I believe. And that's what God is saying to us, right at the beginning of the Esser Dibrot. Know me. Experience me. Don't believe a word I say, but please do what I suggest so that you learn to experience me. Not me as a teacher, but the Creator. With that in mind, we start out in this class teaching one basic thing. This world is an illusion. That's easy for me to say, but if, God forbid, somebody is put in jail, are those bars an illusion? God forbid somebody comes down with cancer, is that an illusion? God forbid somebody has a broken heart from a busted relationship, is that an illusion? And the answer is yes to all of that. But it doesn't feel like an illusion, does it? And the purpose of this class is to start to get you to think and to realize how corrupted our own senses are. And we only have these senses to perceive the world. We have 5 senses. Actually, we have 15 senses. But 5 in the physical world. Sight, hearing, smell, taste, and touch. Let's take a look at sight. The way science tells us sight works is what is the bottom of an object. The light that's reflected from the bottom of that object goes into the top of my eye. And the light that's reflected from the top of that object comes into the bottom of my eye. And then I have to turn that image around. I have to turn it right side up. Why was it created that way? It evolved that way. That's one answer. And I'm not going to argue with that answer. It evolved that way. But that doesn't mean I can't ask, why did it evolve that way? What has it come to teach us? What is the survival instinct that comes from having our vision upside down? And I will submit that there's no survival instinct, but there is a very clear message. It's for us to realize that the world is an illusion. It's for us to realize that the world is upside down. There are many stories of sages, some in the Talmud, some in the writings of the sages, where they describe dreams. One particular one I'm remembering, a father and a son. The son said, "I was dreaming." The father said, "So what did you dream?" And he said, "I was seeing the world, and those people who were important in this world were not important in the higher world. And those people who were not important in this world were very important in the higher world." And his father said, "My son, you have to realize that the world we live in this physical world, is upside down. Your dream is the real dream. People who are not important in this world are the important ones in the higher world. That is the truth. Our world is the illusion." This is something that we learn from the sense of sight being upside down. The same thing applies to hearing. Why do I have to hear with an eardrum that pushes it back? You want to get some water, Rachel?
I have some. I just don't know what's going on. I got a really bad tickle in my throat. Excuse me.
Okay. No problem.
Oh, my allergies this last week have been killing me.
Welcome to the greenery of Boise.
It's cottonwood everywhere.
Yes.
Okay. Sorry about that.
No problem.
I don't need you.
The.
You put me on mute.
It's not necessary. The idea of each of our senses. There is some process in each of our senses that allows the negative system, and I haven't really described why there is a negative system, but there is. There is a positive system and a negative system, and in our world they appear to be equal. The reason they appear to be equal is to give us free choice. You can follow the negative system, you can follow the positive system, but you're never sure which one will prevail. That's what free choice is about. each of the senses are designed so that the negative system can insert itself and convolute it and corrupt it. It applies to people gaining weight. How do people gain weight? It's not that there's too much calories over the burning, which is a valid metaphor. But it comes from understanding the process. Everything is based on the Hebrew letters. And so what we call a calorie is really energy that's coming from one of the 22 Hebrew letters, or a combination of those 22 letters. And that sequence of Hebrew letters can be corrupted by the negative side. And when it's corrupted, people gain weight. And when it's not corrupted, people receive what the energy they need to live properly, to do their spiritual work, as well as their physical work. Each of our senses are an illusion designed to corrupt how we perceive the world. The Zohar says, if we saw what was around us, all of the entities that are constantly around us, we'd die of fright. Why is that? Because this is the system that Hashem has created. He's created a negative system who's going to, not a win-lose situation. A negative system is there to receive energy, just like we are. We are entitled to the first shot at the energy. If we use it properly, we get to keep it. If we don't use it properly, it gets transferred to the negative side. What do you think the negative side is doing? They're trying to get us confused, so we do it wrong and transfer that energy to them. Excuse me, that's the system. The purpose of these two pages, what would happen is I would ask you to count the letter S. And you would count them. Go ahead and count them now, just as an example. Count the letter S in the short version, the shorter version that I believe it starts at the top of the page. There's more than five.
I'm sure there is.
You want me to show it to you? Look at the words of, O-F. Did you count them? All of them?
I thought so. One, two, three, of's.
As I remember, there's six F's in that sentence.
That was five.
Form, benefits.
Two, three, four, five.
Refrigerated.
All right, I'm going to have to
open. Oh, wait, she's reading the short one, and you're reading the long one.
No.
Read that.
I did.
Okay.
I'll count them for you. Five. Just let me open it up, because I don't have it open yet.
I got five. Did I see?
Say again?
Five.
I know your beard is getting darker.
No, it's the light in the room. My beard is getting longer. I need to get it cut. All right, I'm looking at the short one. F in finished is 1. F in files is 2. The word of is 3. The word of before scientific is 4. The word scientific has a 5th one. And the 6th one is the last of years. There are 6 F's in that verse, in that sentence.
This is the 6th one right here.
You want me to go through it again?
1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6.
Oh.
Now my question to you, why do you think you made the mistake?
It's a high-pressure test.
It's not a high-pressure test. What it is we have an entity within us called an ego. And the ego says, I know what this sounds like. I know what this is. This is a silly, stupid thing. I don't know why I'm doing it, but I'm going to go through the motions, and you don't pay attention. You know who gets this absolutely correct the first time? Someone whose first language is not English. Or somebody who's got a Virgo in their chart, because they're counting very detailed. But most people make the same mistake you made. I've had answers that there were 9 F's. I've had answers there were 4 F's. All the way through the process. It's very human, very normal to make this mistake. The reason you do is most people, because the word of sounds like a V, not an F. And as you're scanning the letters, even if you look letter by letter, in your mind you're saying of. Not F. And because of that, you don't count correctly. Now let's look at the larger verse, the other page. Count the letters again. Take your time this time, slowly.
Bob got 13.
13. Bob doesn't want to do it. He doesn't want to get caught in the mistake. There are 14.
I got that one right.
I thought you said 14. I heard 13.
No, I said 14.
Okay, you did get that right. Most of the time, if you have a large group, that first sheet, 50-60% of the people get it wrong. Those people who get it right usually get it wrong on the second sheet. Because their ego is feeling so puffed up that they got it right that they don't pay attention. Usually, of the 50% who get it right on the first, get it wrong on the first one, there are like 60% of them get it wrong on the second one. All of this is related to the question, why do we make mistakes? God doesn't make mistakes. God is perfect, and everything he does is perfect. Well, remember, don't believe a word I say. But you're going to come to understand through these basic classes that what I'm saying is truth. God does not make mistakes. God created us We should not make mistakes, so why do we? Because we are battling something called an ego. We are battling something called an opponent in another idea, another metaphor. We are battling, but even when we're not battling, our senses don't see truth. Because truth is relative. I want you to imagine a fish tank with different colored glass on the four sides. There's a man who's standing outside of the glass that's red. And if you ask him what's the color of the fish, he's going to tell you it's red. And the man on the green side says it's green. And the woman on the yellow side says it's yellow. Which of them is correct?
All of them.
They're all correct as they perceive it. But in the ultimate truth, the only way you can see the true color of the fish is to climb on top of the tank and look down. And then you see that it's silver. Truth is always relative. But people don't want to know that. People want to think they know what's going on. They're important. Their ego is involved. This is the truth. And my truth means you should follow me. Because my truth is true for you too. This is what has led to all of the conflicts in the world. And as soon as we realize that we do not have to perceive another person's approach as truth, that their approach is true for them, my approach is true for me. But both approaches are correct for certain people. My job is to learn to relate and unify with those people who don't agree with me, whose truth is different than me. This is the reason why the world is an illusion. So we can come to this understanding. Remember, don't believe a word I say. Think about what I've said today. Think about why mistakes are made. And come to the conclusion between now and next Sunday. Is this truth for you or is it not truth for you? Because even if you disagree with me, doesn't mean that I am wrong. And even though you disagree with me, it doesn't mean that you are right or that you are wrong. It's just a way of perceiving the world. Now, there are certain spiritual laws. Those spiritual laws are designed to be concealed. And it's only through the study of Kabbalah that they become revealed to us. And it's only through the study of Kabbalah that as they become revealed, we can start to see the world in a more truthful way. We have climbed to the top of the fish tank. We can look down and see that the fish is silver. This is the process, this is the purpose of this first class. The world is an illusion. I've proven it to you. But you have to experience that for yourself. And there's one final aspect that comes from this class. And that's the third sheet. The dots.
I got a print camera.
The dots.
I was interrupted when I was printing.
Nine dots in a square. And I'm going to give you homework to take those nine dots and somehow with four straight lines where your pencil or pen never leave the paper, somehow connect all nine dots with four lines.
I couldn't do the Rubik's Cube either.
It's not an idea of the Rubik's Cube, but there is an idea behind why I'm asking you to do this exercise. Because I want you to expand your consciousness. I want you to recognize that there's a way of seeing the world within the box, and there's a way of seeing the world outside of the box. I'm going to be asking you over the next weeks to look outside the box, to see things in a different way than you have ever seen it before. Why is that? Because that's the way Satan fools us, by keeping us looking in the box. And when we start to look outside the box, we start to perceive things in a totally different way. And we expand our consciousness. And what does that mean? We all have talked for the last 50, 60, 70 years, expanded consciousness. Let's get high together and expand our consciousness. What does that mean? There is two entities within us called conscious and unconscious. When we expand our conscious, information that's available in the subconscious, in the unconscious, becomes available to the conscious mind. That's the tool, the purpose of expanding our consciousness. That's what I'm going to be asking you to do. Stretch. And even if you've had this kind of material in other spiritual paths, or even in the Kabbalah Center, what you will see and how you perceive it, and even when you, Bob heard it from me, he has picked up more tonight than he remembers. Because this is the way we think. We think we know, and we don't. There's only one way we learn, and that's through experience. There's only one way we know, and that's through experience. And that's what I'm going to be asking you to do over the next approximately 20 weeks. Because in those 20 weeks, you will receive every week a different tool to utilize. Today you learned to utilize, not yet to utilize, but you learn the tool, the world is an illusion. That rule is a very valid tool because it helps you perceive the world around you in a different way. Every week you're going to get a new tool. Every week you're going to be asked to perceive the world in a different way. To some extent it's uncomfortable. To some extent, once a week is too fast. And that's okay. You'll hear it. You'll use it. You'll hear it, you won't use it till later. But the rules are always the same. Don't believe what I say, but please try what I suggest. This week I'm suggesting you look at these papers and you think about what it is I've said, how and why you make mistakes, what it is that's causing you to make mistakes. And the cause is never physical. If I throw a baseball at a window with sufficient force, that baseball is going to break the window. When we picture, when we do photographs of the flight of the ball and the picture hitting the ball hitting the window, we notice that prior to the window, the ball hitting the window starts to break. Science cannot explain it. Kabbalah can. It's explaining it the same way I explained the same metaphor of the two lamps and the electricity. There's a conversation taking place. Why I threw the ball doesn't matter. But the ball is speaking to the glass saying, I want you to break. The spiritual system wants you to break. Go ahead and break. I'm going to hit you. I'm sorry I'm breaking you. I don't really mean to cause you destruction. But there's a reason higher than us. Upside down, where we look down into the fish tank, there's a reason higher who's telling us you need to break. And that purpose needs to be experienced. Are there any questions or comments?
You were going to work on the Hanifesh tonight, right?
Work on the what?
Tikkun Hanifesh. Or you asked me to print it for tonight.
Yes, yes. And that's what Rachel was asking about, the Tikkun HaNefesh. And I said we didn't have time because we were getting started a little late. But if you want, I sent you the recordings from those two classes on the Tikkun HaNefesh. My Thursday night class is an advanced class where I'm taking all of the basic classes and expanding them into additional information, additional awareness. So in the case of the Tikkun HaNefesh, I've only done the first three boxes, the top three boxes, and given people the Kavanah, how to pronounce those names, the Kavanah involved in those names, what aspects of their healing is taking place through those names. And I've sent you those recordings, Bob. I don't know if you've heard them, if you had the time to hear them. But if not, and if you don't find them, just tell me, I'll send them again. And for Rachel, any time, if you want me to add a particular class, or if you want me to just send you everything and then you decide what you want to listen to, I record about 14, 15 classes a week. A lot of them people don't listen to. But other classes resonate with them and they want to hear it. So let me know if you want me to add you to that list. There's no charge. I don't charge.
How do you do anything. That?
I'm sorry?
How does that, you send it to my email?
I send it to your an email, either with a link to the recording or by direct attachment.
Okay, either way, I'd like that. As many classes, I like to listen a lot. I have a lot of time at work, I sit around, so that would be, I'd be able to listen to as many as you can send.
Okay, so I'll add you to that list. I think I have your email address, correct?
I do, herewith.
And the only other question before I leave you, assuming there's no other questions, but feel free to ask more. As I said, I don't charge for anything, but I do ask for donations. Since there are many ways for those donations to take place. One is that you can send me a check. One is that I can take a credit card number. One is to send money to me through PayPal. And one is if you have a Wells Fargo bank account, you can send money directly to my account. Or you can leave cash with Bob and he'll send it to me as part of what he does. So it's all up to you as to whether you want to. Donations are appreciated. No one is ever turned away for lack of the willingness to make a donation or the inability to make a donation. I just do remind all of you the spiritual rule that energy needs to be exchanged for energy. And that means that it can be money, It can be volunteering time. It can be exchanging energy with another person in exchange for the energy I've shared with you, because we're all one. It isn't a direct, the universe doesn't always see it the same way you and I would, that I gave you energy you need to give back to me. We don't understand cause and effect. We're not able to see cause and effect as clearly as we would like to. So, however you would like to proceed, that's fine. There's a printout I asked Bob to do. I don't know if he's done it. Shows you the different techniques on making donations, how, and the different ways of contacting me. So, any final questions or comments you want to make?
Thank you. It's a good class. Thank you.
Thank you.
We'll see you next Sunday.
Bye-bye.
Okay, bye-bye.